Blog Talk Radio.
We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Good evening and welcome. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante. I am Lisa Payne Nager. We are here every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Happy to be with you again tonight, flying solo. But we have a very good lineup of guests for you tonight and a lot of things to talk about. As we are in the middle of the legislative session, there is always something new and interesting going on, and this week is no different, and we have a few updates, and we'll have Tom Martz of the Lock and Smith Foundation on with us a little bit later on to talk about some legislation and some Yankee Doodle legislation alerts and things going on. Right to work is one of the issues here in Missouri. And it's a fight all across the country, and it's no less of a fight here in Missouri, and who would think so with a Republican-led legislature, supermajority. But we seem to have a problem passing right to work here in Missouri. I actually spoke to a legislator earlier this week who told me that while he stands on conservative issues, he is not going to support right to work because the constituency in his district is supposedly lobbying him hard to go against right to work. And there seems to be a holdup here in Missouri because the union labor force is out in large numbers working hard. They're scaring the legislators into thinking that they will vote them out of office if they support right to work. Again, in my opinion, it's a silent minority, but those, you know, it's the squeaky wheel situation, and the union is working hard as they have in areas all across the country to defeat right to work. We are going to have with us a conservative patriot who fought for right to work in Michigan, Vincent Vernuccio of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. He'll have to correct me if I'm botching his last name. I apologize. Anyway, a champion for right to work in that state is going to give us some tips and some ideas on how Michigan got right to work through in their state, and he'll be on with us in just a few minutes. Want to talk a little bit about Cynthia Davis. We are so happy and proud to have with us on Missouri Grassroots Radio Cynthia Davis, former Missouri legislator, House of Representatives legislator for 8 years here in Missouri. Wonderful conservative. Was a legislator in Missouri as a Republican, left the Republican Party, joined the Constitution Party, and ran for lieutenant governor in the last election. But we have Cynthia Davis with us here on Missouri Grassroots Radio on Tuesday evenings at 8 o'clock. Her show is called Homefront, and she'll be on with us a little bit later to talk about her show and talk about the things that she's got going, the projects that she's got going. Still very active in Missouri and across the state, promoting conservative values, promoting all of those constitutional values, speaking very eloquently on constitutional principles. And Cynthia is always entertaining to listen to because her conservative message is so common sense. And I mean, and she just lays it all right out there on the table, and it's such a breath of fresh air, so refreshing to listen to her. So hopefully you'll stay with us tonight to hear Cynthia here tonight on Culture Vigilante, and join us every Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock Central Standard Time to hear Cynthia on her show every week. Also, we have with us this week Patrick Warner of Americans for Prosperity. Patrick is on with us quite often. And Americans for Prosperity has worked very hard in Missouri and across the country to stand up for various issues. They're also a proponent of right to work here in Missouri, working hard to help us pass that. And they've done just an incredible job of pinpointing all of the tax initiatives that are going to go on the ballot in April. I mean, Missouri has got just a boatload of tax initiatives in this economy. Can you imagine? It boggles the mind, you know, the fact that government still, well, you know, and it's our own fault. I mean, as long as we continue to allow this and we continue to put these people back in office that are doing this to us. But the reality is that, I mean, they just continue to bombard us with tax after tax. And folks, I'm telling you, you know, we've got to be reaching the breaking point pretty soon. In 2014, when Obamacare kicks in, the economy is just going to go crazy, and you need to have the foresight to think ahead. You cannot be supporting these local tax initiatives because, you know, it's only a few cents here and a few cents there. I mean, eventually, folks, it's all got to catch up with you. There, I heard a report on the radio that consumer spending was up for the last quarter, and you know, which was a positive sign, except more than half of that was due to gasoline prices. So, folks, I know we're all feeling the pinch. I'm feeling it. I know you all have got to be feeling it. We got to stop supporting these tax increases, and we got to hold the government accountable. So, anyway, Patrick Warner will be with us to talk to us a little bit about that and to help us get some strategies and get involved and engaged, because as culture vigilantes, you got to get involved and engaged and take matters into your own hands if you ever want to fix it. So Patrick will be with us to talk about that. And last week, we had a meltdown on Blog Talk Radio. The server went down, something happened, we had some problems for a long time, and we couldn't control the board, and we lost one of our interviews with the free market warrior, Lauren Spivak. And we'll have that interview for you tonight, folks. It's a great interview. Again, more common sense conservative values, but from the free market point of view, from the consumer point of view, about how free markets work and how it keeps our economy and how it keeps our Constitution on balance. Lauren Spivak is a Tea Party conservative. He travels the country speaking to conservative groups and educating folks about how important it is to maintain free market values, to maintain your freedom here. And we'll have a great interview with him. And he is coming to St. Charles County at the end of April. April 29th and 30th. For two nights, he's going to be at the Family Vision Library to give us a seminar on those constitutional principles and those free market values, and we're going to be giving you some more information. I'll have information up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org about how you can get come to that seminar. It will be free to the public. There's no charge for this seminar. You can come and you can hear Lauren Spivak speak on these issues and these values free of charge, very centrally located here in the St. Charles County area. And the folks at the Family Vision Library we've had events there before. They just welcome us with open arms. They have a beautiful facility in St. Peter's, Missouri, right off of Highway 70. And fabulous, fabulous, comfortable setting, you know, for you to come, very large and comfortable for you to come and hear the great speakers. We had Dr. Brian Ray just a couple of months ago, and he's always entertaining. And I'm sure that you will enjoy Lauren Spivak as well here in that very same venue. So tonight, we'll play that interview for you. We'll get you interested in there. We'll kind of tease you with that along, and we'll give you more information as time goes by about how to get involved in that seminar so that you can come and hear Lauren Spivak. Okay, let's talk about a couple of things here. First of all, I want to congratulate all the Catholics and wish them well on their new pope. We have a new pope today, the Argentine pope from the Americas, first pope from the Americas, I think in 1,000 years, I don't remember. So anyway, great news for Christians all around the world that we've got a new pope. We certainly want to do everything possible to wish all the Catholics well and wish the new pope well in promoting Christian values across the world. We hope that this new pope will be able to do that. Let's see. Oh, a couple of issues I want to talk about. I'm going to put a shameless plug in. This is my mom thing going on here. This weekend in St. Louis, We have the hold on a second here. In St. Louis, we have an event going on here, and this is not necessarily a political event, but I really want to promote this because this is an organization my kids have been involved with for years. The first organization is in St. Louis. We have our St. Louis Regional starting Thursday, from Thursday through Saturday. And what FIRST is it's a robotics competition, just to put it plainly. And this is the high school competition. These kids from all over the region, from several states, gather here in the St. Louis area this weekend. And it is just an amazing opportunity to see the ingenuity and the creativity and the sportsmanship and the class that our young people can be involved in. The FIRST organization is just a wonderful organization. It's a science and technology based organization. These kids from all walks of life come together and they build a robot to compete in these competitions, and they do this all over the world. And the season begins this weekend here in St. Louis. It is absolutely amazing to watch what these kids can come up with. I'm so very proud. Our team, the River City Robots, the Channel Cats, Team 1094, always does very well in these competitions. The competition is being held at the Chaffetz Arena down at St. Louis University. It's free to the public, so I would encourage you to come on out and attend that competition and see, and it just gives you hope for the future to see the wonderful things that these kids can accomplish every year. They build these huge, Jimongo robots, and they compete in a game that's designed differently every year, that they have to complete different tasks. This year, it's a frisbee throwing robot, and they climb over obstacles and they climb up poles and they gather frisbees and throw them through hoops. And the idea that these kids, I mean, I've watched them build these robots for years, and the idea that these kids can build these robots to do all of these different functions is just amazing. And all of the things that go into doing it, these kids really literally perform just incredible feats to be able to engineer and design and build these robots. And there are other aspects of the FIRST competition as well. Kids design videos to promote their team. There's a competition that they have, and they won awards for different aspects of writing business plans and promoting their team, and they have videos that promote their team, and they do, sportsmanship. Sportsmanship is the utmost message that these kids promote, so they're all helping each other to succeed and to win, and it's a wonderful, wonderful organization. So go to usfirst.org, learn more about that. Google FIRST St. Louis, and you'll get more information about the competition here in St. Louis. And again, it's at the Chaffetz Arena beginning Thursday. Friday and Saturday are the real great days, though, to see the meat and potatoes of the competition and see what's going on and watch the games. It's very exciting. So that's my shameless plug for my kids and their events this week. Also, I'll backtrack a little bit. My kids are participating in the high school level robot competition, but there are robot competitions for all levels and age groups of kids. So if you have young grade school kids who want to build little tiny robots, Lego robots, they start them out young and they start them out small, and then they move up to larger robots as they go. So if your kids are interested at all in science and technology and building things and working on a team in that kind of way, the FIRST organization has something for everybody. So again, Google FIRST. All of that information will be there for you, and come on out to the Chaffetz Arena on Friday or Saturday and watch these kids, watch what they can do. Okay, again, in my area, I received an alert from the Missouri Precinct Project, the Great Ladies of the Missouri Precinct Project. They've been on a lot of issues this legislative session, and they have done just a fabulous job of keeping folks informed and engaged. And in my area, and we all know that the gun rights and the Second Amendment has been a big deal in across the country. It's been a huge deal in Missouri. Legislation has been flying left and right all over the place about your Second Amendment rights. Anyway, there is some local legislation flying around O'Fallon, Missouri. Tomorrow night, there's a board meeting. All interested folks in the area are encouraged to attend. From what I understand of the issue, an amendment has been introduced, an ordinance has been introduced into the O'Fallon City Charter to protect your Second Amendment rights. And while it has received a certain amount of support from your representatives in O'Fallon, there seems to be some pushback from the city attorney. I don't know why there would be pushback from the city attorney, since we all have our Second Amendment rights and we really just want to strengthen those Second Amendment rights. You just never know, you know, here in the supposedly conservative county of St. Charles County, we always have somebody trying to undercut your constitutional rights. So anyway, there is a meeting tomorrow night the O'Fallon City Council. There's a workshop beginning at 5:30 and the meeting begins at 7:30. Citizens are encouraged to attend. If you would like to speak at the meeting, you need to show up before 7:30. I think you have to sign up to be able to speak for patrons comments. You'll have 5 minutes as a patron to speak to the board, but you need to be there before 7:30 when they submit the speakers list. So go to the O'Fallon County City Council meeting and show your support for your Second Amendment rights there. Let them know that as a voting member of the community, you will support only members of the City Council who support your Second Amendment rights. And perhaps maybe they need to get a new city attorney, you know, if he can't get on board with your Second Amendment rights and he doesn't want to strengthen that, then maybe you need a new one. You know, that's how we do things in America. We vote the bad ones out and we put the good ones in. So anyway, lots of things going on here tonight on Culture Vigilante. We're going to take a real quick break and we're going to come back and talk about right to work.
This is the Gun Owner's Minute. Dan Bongino, a 16-year veteran of the Secret Service protecting presidents and carrying a firearm, speaks out about no such thing as gun control.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's no such thing as gun control. Don't co-opt their language. There's only people control.
Yep, right.
And I can prove it to you. I spent 16 years of my life with a badge on my chest, which served as a target for some, unfortunately. I don't remember ever having the conversation during my years in the Secret Service. I mean, listen, we're taking the president to Baltimore, to Chicago, so let's just disarm because they have really strict gun control laws. Now, why is that funny? The reason is it's funny because it's funny. I never, in 15-plus years of doing this, have ever arrested or investigated someone on a gun crime who had that gun legally. So you have to ask yourself, why? It's not about gun control. Do not co-opt the language. When they own the language, they own the argument.
Yes.
There is a reason they are doing this.
Help get his message out and make this go viral. For the full text, go to, why is this month-old clip of an ex-Secret Service agent suddenly going viral on YouTube? This has been The Old Patriot.
So dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
This is Lisa Payne Baker, and this is Peter Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We're very happy to have with us this evening Vince Vernuccio of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy of Michigan. Had their own right to work battle not too long ago, and Vince is I have it on very good authority, he is a patriot who was very influential in that battle. Thanks for being with us tonight, Vince.
Hey, Lisa, thanks for having me on.
So, I don't know if you're following what's going on here in Missouri, but again, I said I have it on very good authority that you were very involved in the Michigan battle for right to work.
Well, what I'm hearing from Missouri, it sounds like my high school dating life. There's a lot of flirting, but not much action going on with some labor reforms out there. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. Actually, we've got a couple of bills that are stalled in the House. They've gone into committee, and they're just kind of sitting there, growing mold.
That's what I hear. And, you know, hopefully those, your legislators will start to see, you know, where labor reform comes in. I believe there's a dues checkoff, which says that that the government will not be the bills collector for union dues. I think that's one of them. I believe there's also a paycheck protection law out there that's, legislation that's introduced. And that just makes it easier for union members to say that they do not want to give to their union political causes. So I know you have those two. I know that there's been some talk of right to work in out there. But once again, it looks like it's going to be a very uphill climb, to say the least.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So tell me a little bit about the battle in Michigan. What went on there, and how did you guys get around?
I mean, well, first let's talk about, you know, what right to work is. I'm sure all your listeners know, but sometimes it's good to just go through it again. Right to work simply gives workers the ability to choose to pay a union or not. And notice I said pay a union and not be a member of a union, because they can already opt out and not be a member of a union. It's a very long, difficult, hard process, but they still have the ability to do so. But even when they do, they still have to pay the vast majority of their dues. What right to work does is it simply takes away the ability of a union to get a worker fired for not, if that worker refuses to pay the union. So besides that, it does not affect collective bargaining in any other way. Workers and unions can still bargain over wages, hours, working conditions, everything they could before right to work law goes into effect, they could do afterwards, except that the union can't say, that worker's not paying us, you have to fire it to a worker's employer. So that's what right to work means. But right to work's effect is a lot more profound. And, you know, the first thing is worker freedom, giving workers that freedom to choose whether or not to join or not. But on an economic scale, it is extremely helpful for a state. And you're seeing the right-to-work states around the country having lower unemployment, higher job growth, having higher population growth. And workers are actually making more in right-to-work states when you factor in cost of living. So Michigan took a look at that. And as you know, earlier in 2012, our neighbor Indiana went right-to-work and gave workers those freedoms. And Michigan's governor took a look at that. She saw in 2012 that Indiana added over 40,000 jobs, while Michigan lost 7,000. Saw that right on our border, we have a state that's putting job creators and workers ahead of the special interests.
Right.
And our governor saw that and said that we have to do something to respond. And there was a very long, drawn-out, hard ballot fight out here. The unions put a constitutional amendment on the ballot that would have made right to work legislatively impossible. I would also have given government unions an effective veto over legislation, and if you want, we can get into a little bit of the nitty-gritty there. But because of that, it was actually a blessing in disguise, because Michigan was able to have the conversation. And when the unions tried to outlaw right to work, voters rejected that ballot proposal by 15 points. And that was really the message that our legislature needed to say, okay, there is support for worker freedom in Michigan.
Well, let me ask you this. There's a couple of ways to go here. And as to my knowledge, we have not had any union-sponsored legislation come through the legislature so far. It's early. But one of the pieces of legislation that is flying through is languishing in committee right now, has ballot analysis language on it. The concern is, I mean, fighting the union in a ballot initiative is a big deal. We, you know, with a situation here in Missouri, would like that language removed. We want our legislators to vote it up or down. How did that work for you folks, fighting that ballot initiative with that big money and that big unit?
Well, what we were able to show is that the ballot initiative had broader reach than just Michigan, because if the unions were successful here, they would try the same tactic in California and Illinois and several other states that have a ballot-initiated constitutional amendment process. So we were able to show that, hey, this is bigger than Michigan. And then we were really able to dig in, go through the nitty-gritty, and show how broad and how overreaching that ballot initiative was. And now that hindsight's 2020, you're seeing a lot of unions look back at Bob King, the UAW president. He was the chief force behind pushing proposals of him at the teachers union. And a lot of people are looking at that and saying, man, that was a huge miscalculation on his part.
Okay, so in Missouri, I mean, we are looking at, hopefully we're going to be able to get this legislation pushed out of committee and onto the floor for a vote. Hopefully they'll remove the ballot language. You know, like I said earlier before you came on, the legislators individually are receiving a lot of heat. We have a Republican supermajority here, but they are receiving a lot of heat individually from the unions. They're being told that, you know, they're going to have some problems re-elected if they don't, you know, if they support right to work.
And, you know, they tried the same thing in Wisconsin, and they tried the same tactics in Indiana. And they tried the same things that happened, and then they're trying the same thing out here in Michigan. And I'm going to leave the personal threat aside, and there were personal threats. A lot of people I know received those personal threats. The most famous was the governor got a letter saying that it was an anonymous letter saying, I know where your daughter plays soccer. Now, I don't even think his daughter plays soccer, but that's besides the point. But the electoral, the political threats, those are real. And a lot of politicians get nervous by that. However, once again, hindsight is 20/20, and we look back, and we look at changes in Wisconsin, and that was ground zero for the unions. And now they had to defeat Governor Walker's reforms there, and they failed to do that. And then there was an election for the Supreme Court that would have been able to overturn those reforms, and they failed there. And then there was a recall election for state legislators out there, and they failed there. And it culminated with the recall of Scott Walker, the attempted recall, excuse me, where Scott Walker defeated his opponent by 7 points. Then you fast forward to Indiana. And in Indiana, after they passed right to work, there were threats and say, well, we're going to defeat all the Republicans. We're going to defeat all the supporters for right to work. And you know what happened? The state Senate did not lose, the Republicans did not lose a single seat, and they actually picked up seats of the House.
It was a beautiful victory.
And if I could just go a little bit further, even in Michigan with Proposal 2, now, once again, this was the way the union movement was going to change. It was going to mandate that their contracts and the power of the Constitution could overrule the people's elected representatives. And that went down by 15 points. So you have 15 points going down for Proposal 2. You had 7 points for Scott Walker winning. And what's surprising is, even in those two states, Michigan and Wisconsin, President Obama won.
Yeah, not necessarily state.
Right. And they sent Democrats back to the Senate in both states statewide. So there's this disconnect that the unions could always assume, well, we have all these Democrat voters that are dyed-in-the-wool labor, and they're going to rubber stamp everything we do, and frankly, that's just simply not the case. Even when voters are voting Democrat, they're not voting with big labor's interest. So a lot of those threats are starting to seem very idle, and politicians can rest assured if they do the right thing, if they put worker freedom first, they'll be rewarded, and they don't have to worry about the threats coming true.
I don't know if you can comment on this, Vince, but we have got just an amazing amount of tax credit legislation floating through our legislature. I mean, our legislature loves it. I don't know if this works in other states, but really, I mean, you know, Missouri is bubbling over with a great amount of great economy. We've got, you know, we're just thinking, and the fact about that right now, so, can you comment on tax credit is building the economy?
I'm sorry, you were breaking up there, but I think you asked if I could comment on tax credits. Now, the Mackinac Center, my personal belief is that lower taxes help spur the economy. You want more economic activity, lower taxes. You know, obviously, you know, the old adage, if you want more of something, tax it less. However, tax credits are a little bit of a different animal. That's where the government is choosing winners and losers. If they're saying, well, you can get a reward for doing this versus doing that, then they're starting to regulate activity. And they're rewarding activity they like, and they're penalizing the activity they don't. And to be honest, I believe in the free market. I think the free market is who should determine winners and losers, and not the government. And the same goes for the corporate tax credit, giving out, you know, in Michigan we have recently the film tax credit. If anyone went out and saw Oz, there were a lot of money given to the producers to come film in Michigan. And while it says, hey, look, that, you know, that movie was filmed in Michigan, it really didn't help the local economies as much, nearly as much as was touted, and was not worth the money from the taxpayers. So lower taxes are good. Lesser regulation is good. But government choosing winners and losers and doing corporate welfare, that is not nearly as good as simply making the playing field level and a low-level playing field so everyone can compete and compete fairly.
Absolutely. Well, aside from just being able to pull a rabbit out of a hat, you know, we're going to work on trying to get our legislation out of committee. We're going to try to convince our legislators that the union does not have a stronger voice, that they are the minority, just the squeaky wheel, and we're going to try to move this through, and we're going to try to follow Michigan and Indiana and all the other states that are prospering with right to work.
Fantastic, and good luck, and if you need any more information, go to MackinawCenter.org, and for those of you that are not in Michigan or from Michigan or familiar, it's spelled Mackinac, MackinacAC.org, and hopefully we can chat again soon while we get some of those bills moving.
Thank you, Vince Ferruccio. We really appreciate your time. Thanks for helping us out.
Thanks for having me on. Bye now.
We'll be right back with Cynthia Davis.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Welcome back. This is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we are here very happily with Cynthia Davis. Cynthia Davis has a show on Tuesday evenings here at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Cynthia, welcome to Culture Vigilante.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Lisa. Thank you.
We're thrilled to definitely have you on, and we've spoken you before, but it's never enough. We're glad to have you on, and we want to talk a little bit about your show Homefront and find out some of the other things that you've got a lot of irons in the fire, and you're still very active in Missouri and promoting constitutional party issues. So where would you like to start?
Well, there has been a lot of lessons that were learned by all of us in November. It took an election to open our eyes to the fact that we're in big trouble. And even though I didn't win an office, I considered myself comforted by the good company I was with Todd Akin and Shane Scholer and Ed Martin. And you add up the stack of cadavers, conservative cadavers left over, that the voters proved one point to us, and that is that they need more education. And we cannot win our cultural wars if we are not going to be brave and strong and stand up and continue promoting the principles that we all believe in. And that's what it's going to take. The idea that the voters looked at Todd Akin and Claire McCaskill and had to scratch their heads and say that's a tough one should shock all of us, because, frankly, it wasn't that tough. It was pretty clear. One was conservative and one was not conservative. Same with even the Shane Scholer one really surprised me, because that was an open seat. I was in the House when Katherine Hanaway ran for the Secretary of State's office, and we saw that she could not beat the Carnahan name. And we all thought, well, I guess something about Robin Carnahan made it just too strong to be overcome. So this time when it was an open, and the conservatives did very little to help Mitch Hubbard run 4 years ago, because they figured, ah, it's Robin Carnahan, we'll let her keep it. He, the poor gentleman, only raised a pitiful amount, like for a statewide office, about $30,000. That's not a good showing of support, but they figured, well, the Carnahans have a dynasty, we'll let them have it. What happened with now, we had an open seat and it still went to a Democrat. That should wake us all up. So anyway, I'm telling you that the only answer we have left is to help educate the voters. Help them learn what is conservative, what is liberal, what is right, what is left, what is small government, what is big government. How are we going to win it if we don't speak the truth? And so I do my newsletter every Tuesday, and people still can sign up for it by going to my website, which is votecynthia.com. Although I'm not a candidate, but we still have to tell the truth. We have to help people get the picture. We have to explain. And then every Tuesday night, we do the Missouri Grassroots Radio. And it's 1 hour of an infusion of ideas. How are we going to grow people bigger and government smaller? How are we going to do that? So we've had a number of wonderful guests. On the January, we had David Usher speaking on the Center for Marriage Policy. The reason we call it Homefront is because the home is something that is a common denominator among all of us. And when homes crumble and relationships dissolve, it costs the taxpayer. If you want to look at who's spending all the money, it is government trying to make up for the caving in of personal relationships. How can we fix it with a non-government answer? We've also had Mike McManus, who has the another group that's working on, it's called Marriage Savers. He talked about how we could, if we cut the divorce rate in half, we could save a ton of state money and federal money. We've had Karen Ephraim. She's a doctor and a pediatrician, but she also talked about ADHD and Obamacare. And that was an amazing show because, frankly, she explained that they are taking a drop of blood from newborn babies without needing the consent of their parents. This should scare the bejeebies out of all of us. It used to be that parents had some right to know who's getting it. It's going into a vast database, which is being controlled by the Obamacare system, and they will know every detail about DNA and what a propensity will be for genetic weaknesses. Just because your genes show you might not be strong doesn't mean that you're going to get a certain disease. And then another show we did was amazing with Paul Cruz. He has a group called First Step Back Home, and there's no reason for government to have to get involved in the problem of homelessness. We can fix it. We've got private sector solutions. All the big government ideas have only made it worse. So if you like the idea of government interfering and destroying more of what we've got going on, then you need to be educated. You need to listen to the show. And we've just had, last night, Scott Lively was on. If people don't know who he is, You have to listen to the show. That one was excellent also. I'm impressed. Lisa, I'm not bragging. Please don't think I'm just going on and on about how great the show is. I just want to thank you and all the listeners, because we have opportunities here to inform, educate, and enlighten. We've got better ideas. We've got better ways. You're not going to get it on the news. You're not going to get it on TV. You're not going to get it on American Idol. And you're not even going to get it from the legislature. You know, it was kind of hard hearing your guest right before I came on talking about right to work. And I believe that it's a charade. I mean, what's going on is, political parties do these things to try and attract donors for the next campaign. It's all about power and money. It's not really about how they're going to fix a problem. If it were, they would have fixed it by now instead of playing these silly games.
So let's talk a little bit about that, Cynthia. I mean, this whole right to work thing, I mean, it's got patriots across the state boiling. I mean, most conservative folks want to see right to work come to Missouri because it's not about taking the rights away from unions, and the reality is in most states union membership has grown where they've had right to work. But so let's talk about the political aspect of it, because I have literally talked to legislators that are sitting legislators now telling me conservatives, supposedly conservatives, they're not going to support it because the unions are telling them no.
And sadly, they didn't get elected to put their fingers in the wind. They got elected to do the right thing. At least I did. And it should sadden all of us that, you know, they seem very tuned in to certain constituencies, but it's not the people necessarily who elected them. It's the constituency who put money in their campaign coffers. That's the constituency. We need to, and sadly, the big money folks have figured out if you donate to the person who will sympathize with you, then all you have to do when they have a piece of legislation come forth is pick up the phone, call your legislator that you already bought and paid for, and say, hey, don't do that. And if you can't get enough good action out of them, then you just deal with leadership. They wanted to have millions of dollars to make sure that their people would get elected. And the leadership can and will put their thumb on the scale if need be. But I think what we're seeing is a dog and pony show. How many years? When I was in the legislature, we had the right to work question came up, and it never made it to the floor. I don't think there's any intent to bring it to the floor. And if it comes to the floor in one chamber, there's no intent to pass it through the other chamber. If they don't have the will to do it, it's not going to happen.
And okay, so this is just fascinating that we have your inside perspective as a legislator to give us this kind of information. But the literal, and basically what you're saying is what this boils down to is doing the right thing is not always doing the easy thing. So we're going to have to get messy. It's going to get bloody. The patriots are going to have to stand up and start screaming louder than the unions and let the leadership know and let their own local representation know that they're not going to get support from them if they don't stand up and do the right thing, regardless of what the unions are telling them.
Well, the sad part is that I feel the grassroots is getting obliterated out of all of this, and it's because we don't have the money and to overcome the money on the other side. And I don't want to depress anybody. I was taken into an office when I was in the legislature one time. There was a bill that came up, and a certain number of us voted the wrong way on it. And we were requested to have a meeting with the speaker, and he laid it out for us. He said, okay, you know that bill you guys all just voted wrong on? We're going to go back in there, do a reconsideration, and you're going to vote on it again. And this time, you're going to vote the right way, and if you don't vote the right way, you will be stripped of your leadership position. It was that clear and simple. So they have ways, like the old expression from, I think it was Hogan's Heroes, we have our ways. So, I don't know, I laugh, but don't let me scare you. The truth is that there are people who are good up there. The question is, are there enough of the people who are good up there? Have they achieved a critical mass? With a supermajority in both the House and Senate, if they don't pass meaningful legislation, they should all be ashamed of themselves, because they already supposedly have the numbers to go wherever they want to go and do whatever they want to do. So somebody's better come up and be honest. I want them to come clean.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit and let's talk about the influence of a possible third party, a third party in the state, third party on a larger scale across the country. You're a former Republican, now a constitutional party person, and you were that candidate in the last election. Okay, the Republican Party is in big trouble. We know that. I mean, we saw the blood and guts in the last election. It did not work well. And there, people left and right are saying that the Republican Party is dying because of just exactly the kind of politics that you spoke of just a minute ago. So education is the issue. How does a third party influence that kind of education?
Well, I believe that we've already seen one party with the Republicans and Democrats joining arms and becoming one party. And there's a fragment of the Republican Party that is more principled, but we don't make up a majority. We don't. There aren't enough of us. And consequently, the conservative Republicans are losing their elections, as you saw with Jim Lemke and Todd Akin and Shane Scholer and Ed Martin. The good guys can't even muster enough support to win on a statewide or many times even on a Senate level, a state Senate level. So what it's going to take is helping the voters learn. You know, sometimes you can't watch American Idol. You have to be brave enough to turn off the TV and go flick on real information where you can actually learn what we need to do. There is a critical mass that is in favor of big government. And it's not even identified by a party label, because there are enough Republicans who like big government too. And so the big government Republicans and the big government Democrats are the majority of the voters. That's what's scary. We're in love with socialism. So if you take away all the party labels and look at the naked truth underneath it, look at the skeleton, if you will, so that we got to keep the show clean. Sorry about the naked truth. But the point is, we have to be brave enough to call it what it is, and we have to look for real answers. And the whole 8 years I was in Jefferson City, I didn't find anybody there who knew real answers. Even those lobbyists who claim to be in favor of conservative values are really in favor of who their contracts say they're supposed to support. The sad point is that people in favor of grassroots issues like family and limited government and spending less, better budgets, there's no money attached to that. So even those lobbyists don't get it. Wait, they're not getting paid to represent the conservative values. What we've got to do is come up with enough people at some point to tip the scales to show that there are more of us than them. I don't know when that's going to happen. I asked a friend of mine, and he said, well, that will happen when there are tanks in the streets. Well, you know what? I hope we don't have to wait until then. But, you know, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. And those who study Germany understand this can happen very quick if we're not brave and strong and take the time. Yeah, Bill, I love your show. I love my show. I love all of us. I love the listeners. The idea that thousands of people are caring enough to turn on grassroots radio and try and study what's going on and then be a beacon for those around them, that is, frankly, that's the only way we're going to save the state and nation.
Yep. Cast a wider net, and that's the big challenge for the grassroots. I mean, a lot of time we're preaching to ourselves, the next step now is to learn how to cast a wider net. We got to reach out to the folks who are not engaged on a daily level the way the rest of us are.
And I'd like to encourage you not to get hung up on party labels, because that's what's hurting us. We need to get focused on how we're going to limit government. Because you know what? Anybody who's in favor of limited government is my friend. I don't care what party you're with. Let's limit it. Just don't worry about, you know, who's got a, you know, these party people who get elected in all of these positions, a lot of times it's about pride and ego and feeling important and feeling like, oh, I got a title now. You know what? That's not going to get us where we need to go. We've got a finish line, and the only way we're going to get to the finish line is to say, anybody who's with me on limiting government, having conservative budgets, and trying to strengthen families, they are my friends. I'm with them 100% of the way. Let's link our elbows and see how much we can forge ahead.
Absolutely. So, Cynthia, next week, what can we expect on Homefront?
Homefront, yes. We are, I don't have that information in front of me, but it will be on the Missouri Grassroots Radio Facebook and our website. And we have beautiful artwork to help promote the show, and you'll learn something every week, because we're bringing on some controversial people that you won't get to hear anywhere else, and they want to care. They care enough about how we're going to save our country too. So every Tuesday night there ought to be something good, and also you can follow me on Facebook and find out what we're doing every week, and sign up for my newsletter, and that has the information every week as well. That's VoteCynthia.com.
Excellent. Thank you, Cynthia. We really appreciate you taking the time to come on with us tonight. We will join you on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock right here on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We'll spread the word, and I will get that webpage up for you also at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org the way I promised you 2 weeks ago. I'll get that taken care of hopefully this weekend.
So, hey, thank you.
Cynthia's podcast. If you've missed anything before, all of Missouri Grassroots Radio is podcasted. You can listen to any episode previous to from our start date from last May, and we'll have Cynthia's podcasts up there as well so that you can go back and hear her great guests. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, all the listeners. I love you.
Okay, we will talk to you on Tuesday, and we'll come back with Patrick Warner from Americans for Prosperity.
This is the Gun Owner's Minute. Everyone who's a gun owner knows just how difficult it is to purchase ammunition and certain calibers that gun owners are stocking up on. But have you noticed that 22 caliber ammunition is now almost impossible to purchase or find? Some have stated that Homeland Security is purchasing these by the truckloads. Is this because Janet Napolitano and her Homeland Security police are rabbit or squirrel hunting on their time off? I don't even want to think about her in camouflage. Try this on for size. Rumors have been floating for years that a new gunpowder is being developed and that would have a shelf life of around a year. Okay, this sounds like a conspiracy theory, but I suppose it's possible given some of the things the Obama administration folks dream up. However, this would not pertain to the military or law enforcement, but this would pose some real problems for the citizen gun owners and patriots. If this conspiracy were to become true, gun-hitting liberals wouldn't need to pass gun control. They just control the gunpowder. What are your thoughts? This has been the Old Patriot.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And we are back with Patrick Warner from Americans for Prosperity. He's here to talk about all of the great things, and hopefully maybe give us a right to work update. I don't think there's a whole lot to talk about, but the Americans for Prosperity has just done incredible work here in Missouri. They have put together recently just a huge, actually too long of a laundry list of tax going on here in Missouri. It's a little scary. It's kind of sad that this kind of thing is still going on in Missouri, considering the way things are rolling here with the economy. And he's here to talk to us about that tonight. Thanks for coming on, Patrick. And Cynthia is still with us as well. So, Cynthia, jump in if you feel the need. Patrick, thanks for being with us.
Great. Thanks, Lisa. Hi, Cynthia. Yeah, I'm delighted to be with you again tonight.
So, Patrick, where should we start? Let's kind of just start. I'm not sure that you really have anything to tell us about Right to Work, but do you know anything? I mean, that bill, HB 77, is growing mold in the legislature.
Yeah, you know, what they did before, you know, the legislature is going on recess tomorrow afternoon, so they actually start their spring break, which we're calling, jokingly, but not really, spending break. So they go on their spending break on Friday, and they were very quick to get the Paycheck Protection Bill out of the House because the Senate was moving on their version. So I think what they want to do is go into this first half of session, go into recess, go back into their districts, and talk about them, you know, standing up for workers' rights and passing paycheck protection. And I got an opportunity to hear what Cynthia said a little bit about, you know, whose voices are being heard. And I would agree with her assessment that our voices are being outnumbered in Jefferson City. The unions have been very aggressive at turning out their folks and calling and writing and emailing. I mean, we're doing it too, but I get the sense that we're kind of getting drowned out by their sheer volume and numbers of calls. So that is something when session lights back up, after they come back from spending break, that we need to get back on the phones and reignite this fire.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like we need to step it up a little bit. That if we're gonna get this thing passed and motivate those folks, something needs to be done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's right.
So, does Americans for Prosperity have a plan to turn up the heat a little bit on the Right to Work issue?
Yeah, you know, we've been doing this every Wednesday, the Right to Work Wednesdays. Today we did a bunch of thank you notes and asked some of our members and our torchbearers to sort of call in and let Representative Burleson and Speaker Jones and Senator Brown know that we appreciate their leadership on the paycheck protection side of things. So we've had a few of our folks kind of call in and say thank you for the first step. We know we got 2 months left, but this Right to Work is something that we would like to continue to push. And we're going to do that. You know, we continue to collect signatures and petitions both online and in the streets. So, you know, we're amassing a small army ourselves for when that day will come and they take up Right to Work. We're there to stand by their side and give them the encouragement they need.
Okay, very good. Okay, so let's talk about this heinous, ridiculous amount of tax increases. I mean, this is an epidemic. This is insanity that this is on in our state when our economy is struggling so badly, when we've got, I mean, just you couldn't fit all the tax initiatives on a barge and float it up the Mississippi River with as many tax credit pieces of legislation that they've got floating through the legislature. Why in the name of heaven are all these local municipalities putting all these tax initiatives on their ballots?
Yeah, you know, it's frustrating. Your members may not, some of your listeners may not know that back in January and early February, we did a research project called the Municipal Project. And what we wanted to do was look at all the local taxing entities around the state and see what they had put on the ballots. Well, we were shocked to find out that there are over 230 different local taxing entities with some form of tax proposal on the April 2nd ballot around the state. I couldn't believe it. 85% of the counties have some form of local tax proposal on their ballot somewhere in their county. So when we saw that, you know, we weren't really prepared for this many. When we saw that, we sort of changed gears. So what we did is we did a full-blown press conference. We went to Jefferson City, and we told the state and state reps and state senators, hey, look, you know, you may not be aware of this, that there's this many local tax proposals on the ballots back in your districts, not to mention the 2% payroll tax that was put in place by the federal government on top of all the Obamacare requirements and tax increases, et cetera. And so we wanted to sort of paint a 10,000-foot perspective of the economy. And we believe that all of this is intertwined, and that we are going to, you know, put this many local tax increase proposals before the people on April 2nd, and we want, and then we hear the legislature talking about, well, maybe a 1% sales tax to fix our roads and bridges. Or maybe there's a new surcharge out there for the electrics. Or maybe there's another tax increase for something else. Our point is that all of these things are intertwined. And it is very possible, and I showed a couple of elected officials, it is very possible that some of their constituents could get hit five different times between federal, state, and local if all of these things were to pass in 2013. I mean, five times. Can you imagine getting hit five different times in by your federal, state, and local government in the year 2000, in 1 year? On different bills that they're moving forward. We thought this was a little much, and so that's why we announced the municipal project, which is why we're going around the state and talking about this, Lisa. You may not know, we've been to Platte County, we've been to Lee Summit, we're going to be in Jefferson City tomorrow, we're in Springfield on Friday, I'm in St. Charles on Monday of next week. We're doing these How to Defeat a Local Tax Increase. It's sort of an add-on to the municipal project that says, look, if you get 10 people and raise $100, these are certain things that you can do, you know, with limited resources, limited amount of money, to maybe fight back what you're seeing in your local community. So we sort of added that on to the municipal project as well, to maybe arm some folks in the local community and stand up and push back a little.
You know, Lisa, I was going to jump in here for a second because I have a vast amount of experience with municipal government as well. I was in city government for over 8.5 years. And the problem is these cities get stocked up with Democrats, but you don't know because they're all nonpartisan positions. And so you get people elected who are not the most principled, but they're the best at kissing babies and shaking hands, and they have a great haircut. So on a municipal level, these turn into popularity contests. The whole time I was in the city of O'Fallon, we were barraged with proposals to, you know, it's just a half cent. Well, gee whiz, who doesn't think a half cent is a lot of money? Well, they don't understand that it's going to add up. And these no tax increase bond issues are also adding up. There's a point where we have to say that is enough already. If you have a spending problem, if you can't contain your own budget, why do you think you need to keep coming back to us? Well, the reason they keep coming back to the voters is because the voters usually give it to them. And until we get educated enough, again, going back to this education piece, it's not going to happen. People have to get out there and sound the alarm. I remember writing a letter to the editor, and I made the school district administrator unhappy with me. And I certainly didn't want to make him unhappy, but I was using my own soapbox to educate the people. And if they don't it's funny how frequently we complain when we get our tax bill, oh, this is bad, without knowing we did it to ourselves. They cannot raise taxes without a vote of the people. And then as an employer, I want to tell you I'm saddened to see all the taxes, just like Patrick just said, when he was starting with, we've got new taxes this year that the public sector, we're expected to pay, the businesses are getting crunched, and it will be passed on all the time. It gets passed on to the end user. So this is near and dear to my heart, but, you know, taxes are not going to go away until the people say no. We're not going to do any more. You have the same, even with the roads, this just appalls me that with a majority of Republicans in both the House and Senate in the state legislature, that it would even be taken seriously, let's just do 1% for roads. I want to know what you're doing with the money we already sent you. You should be using that for roads. What is wrong with you?
Stimulus that Obama is sending them for roads. We should have roads paved with gold around here, I'm telling you. There's enough to take care of all of it. Okay,
yeah,
so Pat,
Lisa, I got sort of a real world story for you. We did a teletown hall we were in the Kansas City, Platte County area. We were in the Springfield area and then the Franklin County area. There were three Senate districts we were in. And with these teletown halls, you know, you can get 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people on the line at one time. And so I was walking them through the municipal project, and we were talking about all the different taxing proposals that are out there. And so there's a point at which you can press zero to ask questions. And so there were 40, 50, 60 people in the queue ready to ask questions. And one after the other, we were getting small business owners, and Cynthia started to allude to this, that every small business owner that got on the line that asked a question, like, look, Patrick, you know, please help us. You know, I can't afford this tax increase or that tax increase, and I got to be competitive. You know, I can't just pass this along to the consumer. But that's what I'm trying to tell, at least tell, explain to these elected officials, that all of this stuff is intertwined, and that if we keep piling these things up or keep adding these things on to people's bills, it does have a detrimental effect on the overall health of the Missouri economy. I mean, it's no coincidence to a certain degree that, you know, we were 48th in job creation a year ago, second to last in terms of job creation in Missouri. There was a story that said it's going to take us three more years to just get back to where we were in 2008 in terms of creating jobs. So we're really at a point at which that you know, we have to be careful about what we do to our economy.
Right. That's okay, because they'll just give somebody some tax credits, Patrick, and they'll fix everything with tax credits.
Yeah, I mean, that's right.
You go through and count tax credit bills floating through the legislature right now. I think half of them are coming out of offices of some St. Charles County legislators, too. Anyway, okay, so Patrick.
Well, Lisa, you know, and I thought about this a little bit, and if I'm running out of time, let me know. But, you know, a lot of times I keep catching myself sort of, you know, blaming and pointing fingers at our super majorities in the House and the Senate. And then when I saw Governor Nixon sort of come out and bash this tax reform measure that Schmidt and Krause, both senators, are pushing, I may not agree with everything in those bills, but, you know, if I'm the governor and I'm looking at Kansas, looking at Arkansas, and I'm looking at Iowa and Indiana, I'm looking at states all around me doing bold, big initiative ideas, I'd be embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I haven't seen a bold, big idea in four, now going on 5 years. If it were me, I would just look around and be embarrassed. And so, you know, I don't want to just point fingers at the legislature. I think they're doing an okay job, and we're certainly questioning some of the fringe stuff. But I'd certainly question the leadership that we're getting from the governor as well.
Well, always question the leadership that you're getting from the governor, for sure. But, you know, we keep putting them back in office. You know, we had an opportunity.
I know.
Knock him off his pedestal, and we didn't do it. So somewhere along the line, we're not casting a wide enough net. People are not feeling the pain enough to get motivated to say no to these tax increases. Patrick, what's Americans for Prosperity got in line? How can we get in touch with you? How can we get engaged?
Yeah, you know, you've all said it since, Lisa, I've been listening and on the phone with you. We have to stay engaged. We just have to get on the phone and send an email and call our elected leaders and tell them what we think. So from our perspective, we created an action center. It's very easy. If you go to moafp.com, that's moafp.com. And on that site, we have petitions, we have phone numbers, we've got all sorts of ways you can take action. And I just try to encourage our members to go there occasionally. Sometimes we'll put up our new stuff. We got the municipal project up there. So I just want to encourage your listeners to stay vigilant, stay active, and keep on this, and we're not going to get this done without them.
Okay, very good. MoAFP.com. Thank you, Patrick Warner, Americans for Prosperity, and we will be talking to you again very soon. Hopefully the next time we talk to you, you'll have some good right-to-work information for us.
That's right. Thanks, Lisa. Have a good one.
Thanks. Thanks, Patrick. Okay, we'll be right back with Tom Martz of Lock & Smith.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. This is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and that's my from the Republican Convention, Peace Through Strength. I have a conversation here. Charging out of the gate to run. A little concerned about his position. We have with us Tom Martz of the with us here tonight. We're going to do some Yankee Doodle legislation and talk to some others. Being with us, Tom.
You are breaking up really fierce. I don't know if it's on my end or on your end.
Better?
I'm only getting like every third or fourth word you say.
Having so many problems. Is that it,
Robert? Let's
no?
go with it. We'll just wing it.
Okay. Yeah, I've had some problems with some audio the last few weeks on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to have to talk to the folks at Blog Talk about that. Anyway.
I don't know what you just did, but leave it right there, because I'm hearing you perfectly now.
Okay, good. All right. Tom, you and I had a mad frenzy of a Facebook chat today with a lot of legislation, Yankee Doodle legislation possibilities. There's a ton of it. You know, you never run out of Yankee Doodle legislation in Missouri. So I'm going to let you start, because I picked up a lot of stuff at the very end, and I don't know if we're prepared to talk about all of it this week. We can always pick it up again next time. But where would you like to start with Yankee Doodle legislation this week?
The one that I'm looking at right now is one that you sent me, and it's House Bill 421.
Okay, House Bill 421. And let's see which one is that? Let's see. I must have it on the computer. Which one? Oh, here we go. House Bill 421. Oh yeah. I'm going to get beat up over this. Okay. I've talked about this before. You know, I don't know how you feel about this, but I'm just not big on this gold depository thing.
I see us going down a road, and I find this road very disturbing, and many of the bills that you sent me or we talked about are all going down this same road, of which it is somebody in government decides that government needs to grant permission to the people to do something. And I don't know when that mindset occurred, but government doesn't grant the people the right or the privilege to do anything.
Well, it kind of does, because that's where we've gone with it. So, okay, there's a lot of support in the grassroots community for this idea. I have some misgiving. I mean, okay, aside from government granting, you know, picking the winners and the losers thing, okay, I mean, we all get that. Aside from that, I mean, I'm just not sure that this is a solution to the problem. You know, and I'm really not sure that it's a solution to the problem on a state level. You know, if we've got a problem with the foundation of our funding, this is not something I think that can be solved at a state level. And I'll be darn sure that I'm not going to, if I've got gold and silver coins that are minted by the government, I'm not putting them in a depository where the government knows where they are.
Well, didn't we have a president at one point in time before basically determine that all gold had to be turned into the United States government?
Yeah, we did. And, you know, I'll be darn sure, you know, if I've got anything like that, I'm not putting it in a depository where they can find it. So why is this a good idea?
I don't think anything that ties anything to the federal government is a good idea.
Okay, so, I mean, this to me is the ultimate in Yankee Doodle legislation. There's a lot of problems with this bill. You know, and I know that it's been introduced before, and it's gotten a lot of traction in other states. I just don't see how this solves the problem, you know, that we've got with the federal money.
Well, the one thing I really like about this, and it's on page 2, it's actually lines 9 through 12, and I'm being sarcastic when I say I like it, because it states, in furtherance of the inherent rights of privacy and private property, the extent and composition of a person's monetary holdings, including those on deposit with any non-bank depository, shall not be subject to disclosure, search, or seizure, except upon strict adherence to due process safeguards, including but not limited to dot, 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 dot.
And then it lists all the ways that the government can take your money.
It not only that, but, you know, I believe search and seizure comes under the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. And there's also a section in the Missouri Constitution that talks about search and seizure. And we have allowed, or actually government has taken, this search and seizure thing to a whole new level, to the point where, I hate to say it, but the person who wrote this bill needed to make the wording tighter to make sure that government doesn't come in to disclose and do search and seizures, because they already assume that they have the authority to do it.
Right. And under a government collapse, I mean, you know, an economic collapse, which we could see. I mean, you know, we've got the stock market is riding the bubble. We're all waiting for the bubble to pop. You know, they don't know where Germany wants their gold. They don't know where their gold is. You know, I don't understand why it's a good idea. And states want to, except if you're running the depository, which, by the way, this legislation holds harmless the people running the depositories, and hold, you know, they're off scot-free, you know, and we don't know who those people are, actually. So I don't understand why, you know, I mean, we're being herded like sheep into these depositories to put our gold and silver into these depositories just like sheep, and people are rolling with it. I just don't get it. I don't get it. I don't see how it solves the economy and the problems with our gold standard. I just don't see that.
This reminds me of the piece of legislation last year that the majority party floated, which they said was going to be a state exchange, which the state of Missouri, you know, for Obamacare, that it was going to be a state exchange and the federal government had no ties or anything involved in it. But yet within the piece of legislation, it specifically stated that they were going to follow all the federal guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you talked to them about it and said, you just voted for Obamacare, they tried to explain it away and say, well, no, we didn't. We're actually protecting you from Obamacare. No, when you start complying with federal government, federal mandates, you are complying with the very thing that you're trying to tell people that you're protecting them from.
Absolutely. Okay, so with House Bill 421, folks, before you jump on board with this, you really need to take a second look at it. Think it through. You know, this is not the answer to the gold standard being gone in the United States in the Treasury. And you can't fix it on a state level. I think you have to fix it on a federal level. And, you know, I'm all for nullification issues, but this is not helping nullification along at all. So, folks, this is a big Yankee Doodle legislation alert on that one, House Bill 421. It actually was referred to the Ways and Means Committee. It's just kind of sitting there on 3-7, and it's still, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it can still sit there. Okay, what's next, Tom?
Actually, is the 10th Amendment Center come out and support that piece of legislation?
I don't know that for sure, but I want to say yes. I'd have to confirm it. I don't know. I mean, there has been a huge amount of support for this. Utah has a bill that successfully went through. They've been pushing this pretty hard for a couple of years, and they had a big push up here in St. Louis not too long ago, and I went to that little information gathering and didn't get any information from it actually. But people, I'm telling you, people are passionate about it. The Patriot movement really loves this bill, and I'm just not. I'm missing something somewhere. You know, somebody can explain it to me and answer those questions. You know, I'll give it a reconsideration. But I just don't understand it. I'm missing the point.
It would make me wonder how many people really thoroughly understand what it is that they're reading, that they're getting behind it, or are they just taking the word for it because the individual who said it was good looked as a staunch conservative, staunch constitutionalist?
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's back up and let's clarify something, okay? Because I'm just going to get skewered for this for sure. Okay, there are a couple of individuals who people just idolize in the Missouri legislature. And not that they're bad people. They bring a lot of attention to very serious issues, but they write, in my opinion, a lot of Yankee Doodle legislation. And, you know, while it's a very good thing to bring attention to these issues, you know, to talk about them, to educate folks about them so that we can discuss these things and make decisions, just because this legislation is written doesn't make it good. Doesn't mean that it's going to solve your problem. So you really, you know, we've got to stop idolizing and stop worshiping our legislators. We worship God. We don't worship legislators. We need to stop treating them like rock stars. And they need to be questioned and debated on a very reasonable level in a reasonable way. And we need to steer them in another direction with this stuff, because I'm telling you, most of this stuff that I see coming out of the legislature is just not working for the folks. It's making heroes out of people, you know, but it's really just not working for the folks. Okay, so let's move on to another piece. What have we got?
I think these are two identical bills, basically. You've got Senate Bill 325.
Yeah.
I think House Bill 436. They're pretty much identically written. One's in the House, one's in the Senate.
Okay, are these the Second Amendment bills?
These are the Second Amendment Preservation Act.
Okay, let's just kind of preface this one too. Okay, we may want to get into this deeper as time goes by. Again, these are bills being floated among the Patriot movement as bills to preserve the Second Amendment, and the Second Amendment is a hot topic here. You know, maybe they're trying to float all this Second Amendment stuff to divert you off the China hub that they're slipping through, and the Mosira that they're slipping through under the radar, because all that stuff's going on, folks. We're not watching it. We're watching the Second Amendment stuff. But, you know, I mean, isn't our Second Amendment, it's in the Constitution, and it basically, and you correct me, Tom, if I'm wrong, because I haven't dissected these two bills as much as I probably should before we talk about them on the air, but I mean, we've got the Second Amendment, and these two bills basically reiterate we support the Second Amendment.
They do, and they actually spells out that the state of Missouri will not comply with this, that, and the other of any federal government mandate, of any federal gun legislation. Of, you know, one talks about I think maybe I'm misunderstanding. I thought one of these bills had something to do with foreign laws as well, but
there's another one in there it's another piece like that too.
But I would like to know why it is that a piece of legislation needs to be written for them to follow exactly what it says in the Constitution.
There you go. Ding, 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 ding. That's it. Yankee Doodle legislation alert. Okay, folks, again, if we have firm language in our state or federal constitution, I don't understand exactly what you said, Tom. Why do we need legislation to reiterate what's already in our constitution? What we need is legislators with strong backbones to either impeach judges or, you know, follow the laws that we've already got in place. You and I ran into a little issue with the right to work situation where we thought we already had the right to work in the Constitution, and maybe that wasn't quite so. If that's the case, that needs to be made clear. But I'm not seeing, I mean, the Second Amendment is pretty clear. I don't know why we need legislation to support the Second Amendment. I'm glad folks are talking about it. I'm glad the legislators are behind it, but I don't know that we need to have more legislation to support it.
Now, see, I think in essence on right to work, you know, I was told that because the word employees is plural, that means more than one.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you are an employee, don't you have the same authority that employees have?
Oh, you know, and when you get into legalese, you know, I'm not qualified to, I'm sure there's a legalese reason why it was written the way it was written, because
well,
it meant groups instead of individuals.
Let's say you're my boss and I am your lone employee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I have the right to organize and to bargain collectively through my own representation. With you, I could be a union of one.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't see how the fact that employee is pluralized, that makes it any difference to whether or not a person has the right to refuse to join a union. Now, of course, it all goes back to the Wagner Act.
Well, that's it. And it's a much bigger issue, and I kind of agree. I mean, you know, the Wagner Act needs to be repealed, but I think that it all ties in with that, and I think that you need that legislation to support it.
Now, the only thing that I will point out, now last year we absolutely crap canned right to work legislation.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that we did crap can it is because they were going to, as soon as RTW became implemented, they were going to nullify every single contract that had been signed between the employers and the union immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that any government entity should have the power or the authority to nullify an existing contract that was signed
right
by unions and the employers in good faith.
And as I understand it, the legislation as it's written this year is not doing that. So they corrected
correct
that. Yeah.
Yeah, legislation this year,
and that's better.
Contracts to expire, which is a whole lot better than what it was last year.
Okay. We're kind of running out of time because I need to get this other interview in. So, you know what? I really want to talk about this 267, but let's save that for next time because I think that's a big deal. The Civil Liberties Defense Act.
Oh, the Civil Liberties Defense Act. Well, do we have a second to talk about bikes?
About which of the bikes? Just a second. Yeah.
I don't know which one that is, but
it's
the
HB 55. Oh, that's the tax amnesty one. Okay, go ahead.
The fact that you have a state legislator who is going to deem it illegal for you to ride your bike
672
on a state funded highway simply because they think you might be blocking traffic. Don't bicyclists have to abide by the same laws that autos do?
Last time I checked.
So if they're blocking traffic, then you need to call on the phone and say, hey, we need a police department out here. These guys are riding, or these women are riding the bikes, and they're blocking traffic. Some bicycles are not designed to be on the Katy Trail.
Right.
I'm not going to take, and I'm sure that these people who are professional cyclists aren't going to take a $2,000 bike with those little skinny tires onto the Katy Trail, and it's not paved the whole way.
Right.
Try to ride a bike on it.
Yeah, plus over-the-road bikers. I mean, they ride on the roads. I used to be a biker like that. So, okay, that's House Bill 672. We can bring that up again next time, too. But let's talk about that one in a little bit more detail because I think that's an issue. Tom Martz from the Locke & Smith Foundation, thank you for coming on. Thank you for finding all of these bills that I threw at you at the last minute. And we can go into more detail in some of them as time goes by. Go to lockeandsmith.com.
Correct.
Okay, lockeandsmith.com. Find out what the great folks are there, the great work that they're doing there to keep our legislators constitutionally driven. Thank you, Tom Martz. We will talk to you again hopefully next time.
All right. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. We're going to come back real quick after this break and listen to Lauren Spivak.
This is the Gun Owner's Minute. Many gun rights activists feel that it's an all-out assault on the Second Amendment by the Obama administration, with plans to reintroduce an assault weapons ban, banning magazines larger than 10 rounds, and limiting ammunition. What many gun and women rights activists are overlooking is discrimination and the all-out assault on women who own firearms for personal protection and that of protecting their loved ones. 2.5 million good Americans use guns to protect themselves, their families, and their livelihoods every year. Yes, Senator Feinstein, women do own firearms, and according to the 2011 Gallup poll, women reported household gun ownership is 43%, the highest ever recorded by Gallup. Gail Trotter, a fellow at the Conservative Independent Women's Forum, told the Senate Judiciary Committee that curbing access to guns would create an undue burden for women who would choose to defend themselves from violence. Research shows that states with concealed handgun laws have 25% fewer rapes than states that restrict or forbid women from carrying concealed handguns. Yes, there is a war on women, and it's coming from the likes of Feinstein and Obama, who have armed guards protecting them, but while trying to leave women defenseless. This has been the Old Patriot.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible, because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes, walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
We're back. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante. I'm Lisa Payne Nager. Last week, we had some technical difficulties, and we didn't get our Lauren Spivak interview in. I want to play it for you now, and as time goes by, please go to the MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org webpage and their Facebook page, and I'm going to have some information about Lauren Spivak coming to the St. Louis area in St. Peter's to give us a two-day seminar, but right now, let's listen to Lauren Spivak. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We are here tonight with Lauren Spivak, the free market warrior, and he is here to give us some information on his perspective of the free market, maybe a little bit of a civics lesson. If you've ever had the opportunity to listen to Warren, he travels the country speaking to Tea Party groups and conservative groups about his free market message and the part of American government and the civics that go into this great message in making our country work in a free market system. Thanks for being with us today, Lauren.
Well, it's my pleasure. Glad to be here.
Okay, so you're on a mission. You're traveling the country.
I am, yes.
Okay, so you've got a lot of things going on, and we want to touch on all of those tonight. But basically, why don't you give me a little bit of your background? How did you start this journey to go out and educate the folks on the free market system in America? And, you know, what's your background? What catapulted you into this area?
Well, like most things, I stumbled into it. That stuff usually happens. It began in Hickory, North Carolina, and I think it was 2009. I was asked to speak to a Tea Party group, and it's actually kind of cute. I said, "Sure, what do you want me to speak about?" And she said, "What do you know about?" And I said, "I know about economics." And she said, "Speak to us about economics." So I came and I talked for about a half an hour about some of the economic issues that our country is facing, and the response was, you know, far more positive than I thought it was going to be. You know, I always loved economics. I think it's fascinating to me, you know, how things work and why things behave the way they do. And I always thought other people were bored by it. But it turns out that not, and that these issues are coming more and more to the fore in what's happening in our national life. I mean, we're in the process of destroying ourselves through economic malpractice, you know, which is essentially what it is. And so I spoke to them. They wanted more, and I said, listen, you know, if you give me a couple, you know, give me a bunch of hours, you know, I could teach you economics from beginning to end. And I did. They asked me to, and what I did there, and I've improved it and built on it over the years, but that was the original seminar. And since then, I've done it in about 17 states and counting. And about, I think about 200 times, although I've lost the exact count as to how many times. And what we're trying to do is get people to understand that most of what you hear from politicians, from professional economists, even on Fox News, I'd say about half the things I hear about the economy on Fox News are simply nonsense. And, you know, they're supposed to be the conservatives. And, you know, we have these ideas that, you know, spending money stimulates the economy. You know, most Republicans think that. Most conservatives think that. And it's absolute nonsense. And it's been clearly demonstrated, you know, a couple hundred years ago, clearly demonstrated that it's nonsense. If you go out and buy stuff, that does not stimulate the economy. And nor when I do, nor when the government does, nor when Donald Trump does. What stimulates the economy is producing things. If you produce something, that makes the economy bigger. If you spend money, you're just consuming, which is fine. There's nothing bad about consuming, but it doesn't grow the economy. And yet, you know, this is where all of our policies are based on. This is why, you know, Ben Bernanke is printing money night and day, because he has this faulty idea that's crept into our economic and national life that as long as there's lots of money floating around, you know, our economy must be rich. And nothing could be further from the truth. And so we've gotten to a bizarre situation where we actually pay people in our country not to produce.
Many levels.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, many levels of our government. We're paying farmers. We're paying, you know, people all over the place not to produce through welfare and social programs. I mean, it's a fabulous example of that. Well, let me ask.
That's absolutely right. And you know, on welfare, you know, you have some people. I'm sure you've heard who cheat on the welfare. You know, that's it. They secretly have a job, but they lie about it and they get the welfare anyhow. I'm sure you've heard that. Yes.
Yes.
And what you want to understand is that those are the good guys. Okay? If everyone were cheating on the welfare, it wouldn't be so bad. The problem is the people on welfare who really aren't producing. Because the welfare by itself is a relatively minor issue. What's a much bigger issue for our economy is the people who are complying with the rules of welfare and obediently not producing. That's making us poor. Okay? So it's almost everything, you know, has been turned on its head. And you're right, that welfare is an example, our payments to farmers are an example. Most government employees, and there's a few government employees who actually do things that need to be done, most of them are engaged in activities that either do nothing at all, economically speaking, or they make us poor. You know, the Department of Energy essentially reduces our supply of energy. We have less energy because of the Department of Energy. People who go to work at the Department of Energy, there's about 9,000 employees in the department. If they stop working, we'd be richer because they're negative producers.
Because of the regulation that they bring through energy,
yeah,
is that it?
They get in the way of the production of energy through regulations or even the CO prohibitions on producing energy. We have tremendous amounts of energy in this country. One of the things that's contributing to our becoming poorer is that we don't produce it. You know, it's coming to everybody at the gas pump. You know, the high price is because of the shortage of supply. But there isn't a shortage of supply. It's there. It's just the problem of energy gets in the way of producing it. And thus prices go up, we all pay more for gas, which is just an individual manifestation of the economy being made poorer by our energy policies.
Okay, let's break this down a little bit deeper. I mean, I've seen your YouTube videos. You give a fabulous kind of an overview on basic civics, really, and how the economy ties into the governmental civics and what they're supposed to do and what they're not supposed to do. And I know we're going to talk about this in a few minutes. You go around the country giving these seminars, and you're going to be in the St. Louis area at the end of April, and we'll get some more details on that. But really, I mean, people do not have a basic understanding of how their government is supposed to react and behave on an economic level and what their duties are within government and what their duties are not within government. And when you tour the country, what kind of reaction do you get from people on that issue?
Oh, I usually get a positive reaction. I mean, most of what I do is speak to people who agree with me on the fundamental points, and what I'm my major service is I'm helping them with understanding the background arguments. That is to say, I typically speak to groups who want smaller government and lower taxes. But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get them more sophisticated about it, because I think that the political decisions are made over people's backyard fences. You know, people argue with their neighbors about what's going on in government and what's going on in the economy. And what I think is incredibly important is that our guys understand the arguments, which are essentially correct. If you understand the economics of it, it's not even providing a whole lot of room for dispute. But most people don't. So their neighbors tell them, you know, the reason you want lower taxes is you're greedy. You know, generous people don't want lower taxes. Only greedy people want lower taxes. And, we know that's wrong, but it's important that we can articulate exactly why that argument is wrong, what taxes actually do to our economy. And I've had a really, really positive reaction, because I think people really want to know this stuff. They used to teach it in school. You know, one of the things I ask people in my seminar is if there's anything we've gone over that, you know, wouldn't fit perfectly well in a high school curriculum. And there isn't. But high schools don't teach it anymore. The people who run the high schools don't understand how a free economy works. So we've managed, you know, if you look at the broad scope of American history, we became rich as a country. We became easily the richest, most powerful country in the world because we had certain economic principles and certain governmental principles. They interact, you know, a lot. The government uses force to change how the economy behaves, or at least it does that in some cases. And having gotten there, we've managed to undo all of those gains by going away from the principles, because people, you know, have forgotten what the principles were that brought us there in the first place.
Okay. Well, you know, you said you're most of the time you're pretty well received, but I've read about you that sometimes you're not very well received, and you had an issue a while back where you were, as a free market capitalist, trying to peddle your wares in a local mall, and you were bumped out of the system there. Can you tell that story a little bit?
Yeah, that's a slightly different setting than the seminar. But in November of 2008, I was very committed to doing something to have an impact on the direction the country was going to. I was really alarmed by the election of Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi and people of that ideological bent. I grew up in Western Massachusetts in a very left-wing town, and I went to a very left-wing college. And I'm very familiar with the kinds of people who hold the ideological position of Pelosi and Obama, and I was really nervous about, you know, what the implications of that were in our country. And so one of my early experiments in trying to get the word out about, you know, what's going wrong, I had a small business in a mall in the Concord, North Carolina, where we sold various material, you know, that had a conservative free market message to it. And we ended up getting kicked out of the mall because we had material that criticized Barack Obama. And I subsequently learned that the mall is owned by Simon Property Group, which is I believe the largest owner of malls in the world. I think that Simon Property Group owns malls in, you know, something like 47 states and 28 foreign countries. You know, there's a Simon Mall near you. And they are also huge donors to the Democratic Party. They give millions and millions of dollars to the Obama campaign, to the Democratic Party in general, to Hillary Clinton. I mean, every Democrat you've ever heard of is supported by the owners of Simon Malls. And So anyhow, so there's a, you know, they claimed, of course, it was just a coincidence that they're, you know, the fact that they're all Democrats has nothing to do with the fact they kicked people out of the mall for criticizing the Democrats. But that's what they did. But I wouldn't describe it as a negative reaction. I actually got a tremendous positive reaction. Most of the local community, this is Concord, North Carolina, is a conservative county. Most of the local community was, rallied to my support, which I'm, eternally appreciative of.
Well, that's a good story. So from there, you're an author, and you are a free market capitalist for sure. I went online and read snippets from your Obama parody. It's hilarious. If anybody has the opportunity to get a hold of that book, it's just hilarious. You want to tell us a little bit about your Obama parody books?
Yeah, sure. It's the website, by the way, if you want to see it, it's ObamaParody.com. And at this point in my life, it's kind of, there's two directions I'm going in simultaneously. One is the seminar, which is, I try to have a sense of humor and make the seminar as entertaining as possible, but it's about, understanding serious economic issues that are affecting our lives, our children's lives. But the other thing I did is had more of an emphasis on the comical side of things. It started with an epiphany that Barack Obama has the same personality as the Cat in the Hat. And I imagine most of your listeners have read the Cat in the Hat to their children or their grandchildren. He has a very popular children's book. And the character of the cat is very interesting. He bursts into this middle-class American home and wrecks the place. He wrecks everything he touches. And as the book goes on, things are getting worse and worse and worse inside the home. But the key personality of the cat is that he never gets that there's anything wrong. The cat never perceives that he's the problem. He's absolutely self-assured throughout, and he's convinced that anything he does must be a good idea. And I was thinking about that. I said, that's Obama. That's the essence of his personality.
It is.
He cannot conceive that his idea could possibly be a bad idea. And that was the first thought. And then he has two friends, Thing 1 and Thing 2, who come out and wreck the house even worse. And they became Reed and Pelosi in my book. And then there's a fish. The fish is the one who is the voice of reason, who is warning everyone against the cat. The cat shouldn't be here. And the fish became Glenn Beck. And before long, we have like the whole story of the Obama years, at least thus far, done as the Cat in the Hat. And the parallelism is just remarkable. It's people who have read the original in particular, will appreciate, almost we were able to take what happened in the original and make it relevant in his parody.
It is. It's absolutely hilarious. I was in stitches while I was reading it, and the parallels are just uncanny. It's amazing. So if you have the opportunity to read that book, it's great entertainment. But okay,
and I'll tell you, I have a sequel coming out later this year. This probably late spring, early summer. We have a sequel coming out. What I'm trying to do in this endeavor is to present important ideas in a very lighthearted, fun way. It makes it accessible to a lot of people where it wouldn't be getting the message otherwise. I can write a 300-page or a 500-page book about, why our economy is, going off a cliff. But, people don't tend to, read them.
Right.
Most people will, and the people who read it don't need it as much. This is my idea that you can get these points through humor more effectively than through exposition.
Right, and it's multi-generational, so it'll reach a wider audience. It's a great idea. It's brilliant. So on your other path, let's talk about your seminars, because you're going to be coming to the St. Louis area in St. Peter's, Missouri on April 29th and 30th and giving a seminar two nights, Monday and Tuesday night from 6:30 to 10 at the Family Vision Library. And I'll have more information up on MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org about that as time goes by. But so we've gotten a little bit of a flavor about your general you know, your general mission, what kinds of things do you like to present in these seminars that people can come away from?
Well, I want them to understand the basics of how a free economy works and what it does. I mean, one of the it's easy to draw analogies on this, and I tend to think in terms of analogies, but it's kind of like, you know, if you don't know how your car engine works and you start fiddling around with it, you're far more likely to make it worse than make it better. Does that make sense? If you're just,
yeah.
I don't know what this does, I'll just yank this out and see if that makes my engine work better. The free market is based on a set of principles that, you know, thousands of years of human history have shown work and lead to prosperity. And having lost, you know, and this is, as I said, this has been going on for thousands of years, most of which time people didn't understand this. In the 18th and 19th century, people started to understand economics. This is the Enlightenment. People started to look at things that had been there all along and understand them. That was a kind of the big Enlightenment thing. The study of linguistics. You know, people had language from the beginning, but in the study of linguistics really only popped up in the 18th century when people started to understand that language actually has a pattern to it. You know, it's a spontaneous, you know, it changes, it grows, it develops. It's a spontaneous, you know, human creation language. But the idea that it could be studied and understood as a science only came about in the 18th century. So similarly, economics had always been going on. People were always making things and buying things and selling things and going into business, but no one studied it until the relatively modern era. And we learned how it worked. And then, because that's the 18th and 19th century, and then we spent the 20th century forgetting it. So we're going back to pulling things out of our car engine, you know, because we don't know, you know, why they need to be there, but there's a reason why they need to be there. And so I want people to understand that. I want people to understand that it's not that hard to understand what fundamentally goes on in the economy. One of the things that bothers me about economic elites that, you know, are advisors to, let's say, you know, Barack Obama or other presidents, is that they try to make economics as obscure as possible. And most Americans have come to believe that it's just way too complicated and they can never understand it, and you just have to leave it to experts like, you know, Timothy Geithner, you know, who can't pay his taxes right, but, you know, he's the only one smart enough to fix our economy. And the fact is, it's very straightforward once you get the basic concept down. And in a free society, you really have to understand how the economy works. Otherwise, you know, how do you pick who you're going to vote for?
Exactly. And if we had a better understanding of the mindset and philosophy of the current president, perhaps we would have made a better choice at the ballot box in 2008
and
2012.
And if people understood what really causes prosperity, you can evaluate these decisions, you know, based on something solid. And as opposed to, you know, whether the guy smiles at the camera, you know, nicely, or, you know, whether his kids are cute, you know, whatever the case might be, people vote on a lot of really silly things, partly because they don't understand, you know, the fundamental issues going on. You can't just do an economy any way you want, any more than I can just rearrange my car engine any way I want.
Absolutely.
It works in certain ways and doesn't work in other ways, which is, I guess, the third point that I would make. If we have a tendency in the modern times to say, well, we can just do it whatever we please. You know, we wish things worked like this, so we'll make them work like this. But they don't, and they can't. There are things that work and things that don't, and our understanding of economic reasons for that. So having said that, I try to get people to get a better understanding of what money is and what it does. There's a lot of myths about money itself. Some people, like John Maynard Keynes, who is the one who came up with the idea of economic stimulus, that the government can dump a bunch of money into the economy and make it richer, they misunderstand money because they think that it is wealth. That if you just print a lot of money and hand it out to everyone, then they'll be wealthy because they have a lot of money. But money, of course, isn't wealth. It's just a tool that helps us manage wealth. And it's our confusion of money with actual wealth that leads to most of our economic problems today. And on the other end of the spectrum, you know, I've had people who, you know, think that money is evil, that, you know, if we just got rid of money, then all of our problems would go away. And that also is nonsense. Money is perfectly useful if you understand what it does and what it doesn't do and what its logical role is. I actually had somebody tell me once that there's a whole crackpot theory about money, and he said that if we got rid of all money, that we wouldn't have illegal drugs. We wouldn't have, you know, heroin and cocaine, because they're bought with money. That's what he said to me. And I said, well, we also wouldn't have toothpaste. You know, toothpaste is bought with money. We wouldn't have baseball bats or tennis shoes or bicycles, because they're bought with money. It's really silly.
Yep.
You know, people ascribe all of this magic to money, and yet it's a very clear, logical, you know, factor in an economy. And if you appreciate it for what it is, you can make smart decisions about it. So similarly, in the first night, we focus on, you know, on conceptual issues. So we talk about the basic rules of capitalism, and capitalism does have rules. And we talk about the basic concepts of socialism and what capitalism and socialism really disagree over, you know, what the point is behind the scenes. And what else do I talk about? I talk about value. One of the big arguments between capitalists and socialists that's been going on for a couple hundred years is what makes value. You know, if this house is worth, you know, $100,000, or this car is worth, you know, $30,000, what makes that have that value? And understanding that, because of course, you know, that also is directly connected to our prosperity.
Right.
You know, understanding that, you know, kind of lets you understand how prosperity comes from. So the first night is all about understanding those core ideas. In the second night, we talk about how to fix virtually all the problems in modern-day America via capitalism, how economic freedom will, you know, not only create prosperity, but we talk about how we can make education better through moving it away from government toward a free market. We talk about how to improve the environment. You know, most environmentalists think that you need government to interfere in the economy to make the environment better, and what I think I demonstrate fairly effectively is that the government involvement actually makes it worse, that we have a better environment by not having the government involvement.
Okay.
We talk about how to improve race relations, we talk about issues like overpopulation, and all in terms of what, you know, free markets and free human action show us about our economy and in fact ourselves.
So it's a much wider range of information that you ever thought that you would get out of an economics lesson. We're going to actually put more. We'll be talking to you again many more times before you come out to St. Peter's, and we'll post your schedule around the country up as well, so that if you are in the listening area of this internet radio talk show, you'll be able to follow the free market warrior around the country and sit in on these seminars in other places other than St. Peter's, Missouri. But Lauren Spivak, we want to thank you for being with us tonight. We look forward to seeing you in St. Peter's, Missouri at the end of April, and we will be talking to you again soon, many times before then, to kind of bring people up to speed on your travels and your coming visit to the area. Thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, well, thank you. And by the way, I also have a Facebook page, and I'm trying to update that with videos of various talks I give in places, so if people want to look at that too, they can.
Do we find you under Lauren Spivak?
Yep, S-P-I-V-A-K.
And theobamaparody.com.
That's right.
Okay, very good. We'll be here to talk to you again soon. Thank you for being with us. It sounds fascinating. And if you have an opportunity, folks, save the dates, April 29th and 30th in St. Peter's, Missouri.
Okay, that was Lauren Spivak, the free market warrior. Like we said, we'll have more information up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org about his seminar here in St. Peter's and other places around the country. We're running out of time. Want to say thank you to all our guests this evening, and we will be back here again on Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, with the Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.